Good morning and welcome to Race Industry Now, the weekly webinar series from EPAR Trade, presented to you by ARP, Performance Plus Global Logistics, PIC, Ferrea Racing Component, and Fifth Third Bank Motorsports. I am Francisque Savinien, the founder and CEO of EPAR Trade, the racing industry, every minute, every day. This is episode 443, and we're going to be talking with Get Them Performance about carburetors. With me this morning are Judy Kinn, the co-founder of EPAR Trade, and a wonderful host, Mr. Brad Gilly. Judy?
Thank you, Francisque, and thank you everyone for joining today. I'm really excited to have Trevor and Mark on, and I've watched Trevor launch his company. He's been around for years now, and he is a staple in this industry. So it's a pleasure to have him on, and boy, does he have a registration list today of people watching. That's just proof that he's a staple. So it's going to be exciting to hear what he has to say. Brad?
Appreciate you guys and everything that you do with EPAR Trade, and I'm really looking forward to this as well. So with that, what do you say we get started?
Yes, and I think we've got a little video to start the webinar. So why don't you roll the video, Reed, and then we'll let you take over, Brad.
Awesome. All right. Well, gentlemen, welcome. That was pretty cool, actually, by the way, seeing a camera focus right there on the carburetor making a run. Today's webinar is titled, Are Carburetors Still a Viable Option? By Get Them Performance. And joining us, Trevor Wiggins, the owner of Get Them Performance, and Mark Wessler, the director of sales for Fuel Factory. Gentlemen, welcome. We appreciate y'all being here today. How are you?
I'm great, Brad. How are you? And we appreciate you inviting us.
Yeah, no, this is going to be wonderful. I always look forward to doing these and definitely looking forward to today. I just to start out, if anyone has a question along the way, feel free to type it into the chat and we'll get as many questions asked as we can. And we got a lot of ground to cover here, which is going to be a lot of fun. So we'll just go ahead and dive into it, gentlemen. And Trevor, let's go ahead and start with you. Get Them Performance, still fairly new to the market. But obviously, you've got a lot of knowledge behind it with all of your years in the racing industry. So if you would, Trevor, tell us a little bit about Get Them Performance. Where did you get the name Get Them? And what is the main market for your business?
Yeah, you bet. It's kind of a long road. And I, since we only have 45 minutes, I can only do parts and pieces of it for sure. But a big piece of it, I grew up in motorsports. My family farms in Western Kentucky. It's all types of different. We truck and tractor pull. We really enjoy, to this day, we still really enjoy truck and tractor pulling as much as can be. We run blown alcohol, Hemi motors. We run big block Chevrolets, 2-engine, 3-engine, 6-engine tractors. So you get really kind of used to that type of performance. Of course, then you get a load and you go to college, and then you got to have the job and you still try to race on the side. So, and I know you consider yourself a do-it-yourself kind of guy, a shade tree mechanic. That's kind of how we all come up into this side of the business. But I went to work for, I went to college as a mechanical engineer, got an engineering degree, went out of school, coming to DuPont, where we were still racing quite a bit on the side, but I was a robotics engineer. And then right after that, roll into Holley. I was vice president of Holley sales for a few years. And then after Holley, I rolled into Comp Camps, which I have excellent relationship with Scooter Brothers, Ron Coleman, Billy Godbold, Lake Speed. I know these are guys that you guys know very well. And then I started seeing a lot of things happen in the industry as far as private equity groups buying different companies up. And in one sense, it's a great thing because these private equity companies put in, they start bringing in money, they put in great opportunities. And then I had I kind of changed gears then. And all of a sudden I've got at that point I had an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, two boys. And of course, my wife did not want to try for that third kid because she did not need another boy in this game of motorsports. So we decided to go, okay, I'm going to go out on my own a little bit and start getting performance. Get them really is going back, and we talk about go get them, or I stick my head in my kid's car, or I stick my head in a car a lot of times and say, go get them. But get them really wasn't really planned the way it was supposed to. Get Them was built as Grady, Eli, Trevor Motorsports. And those are my two boys. So when everybody says, go Get Them, why would you name your company Get Them? It really does fall into my family business and my family direct. And I've got all kinds of family in this industry. I've got aunts and uncles, and I've got my nieces and nephews and brothers. So we're somewhere at a motorsports event almost every weekend.
That's really cool. By the way, you had me at tractor pulling. I'm just saying. I love it too. I think that's awesome. Mark, I want to bring you in as well and just introduce you. Fuel Factory, you guys are also fairly new to the scene, but the names behind it are pretty well-known industry professionals with a ton of experience. So if you would, as we get going here, Mark, tell us a little bit about Fuel Factory and what sets you guys apart from some of the other fuels out there.
Sure. Well, hey, good afternoon. Appreciate you having me. And I've known Trevor for a number of years. We've worked on quite a few projects together over the years. Him and my father raced together for a number of years, side by side in some NHRA stuff. And so, yeah, I'm a former management member at a different fuel company. And myself and a couple of partners decided at the end of 2019, we decided to kind of go out on our own and put our own program together. We launched at the PRI show in 2022. So, yeah, we're right at about 15, 16 months old. We're a manufacturer of race and performance fuels, 20 plus blends, growing our distribution daily, and super stoked to be here and talk with Trevor about some fuel technology stuff and what he's got going on at Get'em, and just some of the things that we can try to teach these guys.
Awesome. Well, that sounds wonderful. So welcome both of you to the industry as far as your respective companies goes. All right, Trevor, let's talk about carburetors and the types of carburetors that Get'em Performance produces and what sets you guys apart from some of the rest.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, we build a few different types of carburetors, from the typical four barrel carburetors start around 650 CFM, and we'll go up to around 2500 CFM. That's not your daily driver, to be honest with you. We'll do a twin blade carburetor. We'll do a lot of different styles carburetors, and going from where we was in early off carburetor side, we really have changed, because early in carburetors, it really, and if you'd allow me to share screen real quick, I'll start to share screen real fast.
Please do. There we go.
Awesome. Can you see that?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. So we'll flip through some of these. It started in the back. And I'll dig through some of these. I apologize real fast.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm like an audio professional. I didn't have my microphone on when we started. So I'm
awesome. I did watch that first video of George Poteet at ARP of him advertising the Bonneville Softflex. That gold car up in the corner is a Seagas roaster that George loaned me for a year. And I will tell you, I blew that motor up about four times till George said, "We've got to stop. You're not going to get a record this time. We're going to stop that." But I'm an avid, like I said, shifter cart racing. I've shifter cart raced all kind of super comp race. I've top dragster raced, Bonneville race. And again, I go back to truck and tractor pulling. I still bleed truck and tractor pulling. My family still does it on a weekly basis also. So we still bleed that quite a bit. But yeah, I'll go to the next slide. Talking about Bernoulli's equation. This was 1738. You can fact check that. This still exists today. I'm not creating anything new at this point. We're not going to reinvent the carburetor today. We're not going to reinvent the carburetor for how we currently do it. But what we get into is a carburetor versus mechanical injection versus fuel injection, EFI. And if you go, and I'll go back one to that, you see a couple of cars down there, that EFI, those silver cars, those are EFI fuel injected cars. So I'm not shy. I could even be classified as a closet EFI guy. So, and I kind of don't mind that. There are benefits to both. There's benefits to the carburetor. Carburetor works off of a vacuum. And coming from Billy Godbold told me one day, said, if you can make a toilet bowl, one, and you can also take a paint gun, and if they had a kid, it's going to be a carburetor. And of course, if anybody knows Billy's personality, that really kind of does fall into Billy's personality. And he also had a conversation about Bernoulli's equation. He said, if you really don't trust Bernoulli's equation, you never need to get on a plane because it's not going to work. So we still build off that original Bernoulli's equation. So that's, we build a throttle bore to a Venturi ratio of around 92 to 95%, just depending on what we're doing and how much we want fuel to pull. So if we get into in-train fuel versus fluid flow, and this is going to be a real basic conversation of how a car works. That is how it works. There is no magic in that. Now, where the magic kind of comes in is to Venturi ratios that I mentioned earlier. How we machine that is dramatically different now. Before it started out, like we was casting everything, we was pouring things into molds, and you would have some different mold shifts. You would have some different issues that always kind of would take place. Now, you would clean it up with a machine. But today we have dramatically different engineering skills than we had back then. Back then they were using T-squares and a drafting board. Today we're using computers and 3D printers. And I can show a few of this stuff. I mean we can actually 3D print this, and I'll throw my kids in the mix. My kids are heavily involved in this business. They junior dragster race, they're out there. So we can draw it, 3D print it, take it and run it on a dyno, and then come back and make an adjustment to it. And these are day processes. These are hourly processes. Before, if we wanted to machine that piece, it would take weeks, months, a year to get all that done. And finally, we could cast it and make it. So now with our engineering process is different, our machining process is different. We can really kind of do anything we want to do if you have the thought process to actually do it. So going into the four barrel carburetor, I'll fast forward to another one. That's a twin blade carburetor. That'll be a bladed carburetor. So looking at some of those carburetors there, and I'll show you examples of each and when I stop sharing. But long story short, these carburetors really do change. Our carburetors today and our engines today are not your typical 283 small block Chevrolet. We're doing 632, 655, 9 degree for a large number of our bracket racers. So back then, if you said you had a 200 horse 283, yeah, that's a pretty good motor. Then you get up to another motor that we get into that say, okay, now we have a 454. Now we're really kind of starting to kick butt. Well, Holley, for example, they had the 650, 750, 850, 950, 4150, and we're going to go around 74, 75, and then they come out with a carburetor called a twin blade carburetor, and then they come out with another one called a three barrel carburetor. And if you're a good do-it-yourself, you're going to remember some of these, and I might be a little bit older than you guys are, so I'm just going to tell you the truth. I remember some of the three barrel stuff coming out. Well, they were looking for another platform to build, so that's when they realized the twin blade wasn't going to be big enough, so they ended up coming up with a dominator. That's where we get into the 4500 series, which I'll back up and show that real fast. That gets into the Dominator series. So here, let me stop sharing. Am I back on?
We're back to normal.
Awesome. So we get into this piece. That's a twin blade style carburetor. And you'll see it has really low negative pressure under the bottom of it. So when you lower that negative pressure, that reduces the need for a super sucker or shear plate. It reduces the need for that underneath the bottom of that carburetor. Now we'll get into the Dominator size. You'll see the bottom of that carburetor where it has large voids in it. So that we're going to need the shear plates. We're going to need the super suckers. We're going to need these things to help minimize the negative pressure underneath. So we're not reinventing the carburetor. We're just trying to change how we manage fuel coming into the motor. And that's where Mark kind of comes in. The fuels aren't the same either as they were in 1968, 1972, 1985. Now we have fuels that are oxygenated. So they're very, very light fuels. So we don't need that 750 carburetor anymore. We can actually go up to a 1600 CFM carburetor. We can go up to a 2000 CFM carburetor because we have much lighter fuels and we can actually get it to pull. So I hope that describes a little bit of what we're going to talk about today in detail.
I think it does. Let's talk about your carburetors because, they just look like beautiful pieces of hardware for sure. Where do you produce those and why is that an advantage?
We produce them here in-house. Now, we do have vendors. We machine everything that we can in-house. I've got a couple of Haas machines. I've got a couple of Akuma machines. And I've got a couple of old Hardage machines and everything. But we try to produce everything in-house. Now that's easier said than done when you start making more than one or more than five or more than 20. We do have vendors, but we try to keep everything we possibly can made here in America. So we don't usually look outside for vendors. We make our own jets, we make our own air bleeds, we make our own shafts. This is a proud dad moment. I'll tell you, my youngest boy, 14, well, 13 when he started welding hardcore, and I had a welder to weld all my shafts. My 14, 15 year old kid now, he actually welds every stainless shaft. He welds them all. So it's kind of bad that I have child labor. And I'm not sure I'm going to get in trouble on this video, but I hope I don't get a call after this video comes out. But he welds every shaft that goes through my shop.
Wow, that's really cool. I would say I know a lot of people who grew up on a farm, and when the farm went away, it's when the labor grew up and went away as well. So hopefully he continues to keep welding for you for a long time. Well, this takes us to the topic of the webinar, Trevor. Why are carburetors still a viable option, and why billet over cast?
Starting off, why are carburetors still a viable option? I really truly still believe that the carburetor will always make more fuel, more horsepower than an EFI. Now, there's going to be a couple of reasons in here. One thing is when a booster, when it releases fuel out of a booster, it atomizes a certain amount of fuel. So you're going to get a certain amount of cooling effect coming out of that booster. So it actually cools the fuel when it goes down into the intake runner. And I'll let Mark talk a little bit about what happens to fuel and everything on his side. But when it comes out of that booster, it gets cooled as it goes down. It evaporates a certain amount, and that creates a cooling factor, and it goes in, hits the valve, or even goes straight into the intake runner, or goes into the actual cylinder. So that's going to create a certain charge that we can't actually create yet in EFI. So the carburetor a viable option, and I'll back up real quick. Quick, Brad, and just to throw it out there, my customer base. We're not Top Fuel, we're not NASCAR, and they've been through the carburetor. I say NASCAR, the carburetor world, I thought was awesome. I still bleed that world a little bit, but when we look at my clientele, a lot of times they're big money bracket racers, and a lot of times when you say bracket racing, you think of the local Saturday night. Little Saturday night race. And that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. Now, it is what I'm talking about because we do local bracket race. But what changes is when they'll put $1 million up to go big money bracket race. Now, we know Peter Biondo puts up $1 million. We know SFG puts up $1 million. We know Britt Cummings puts up $1 million. We've gotten to where we actually have a handful of customers that are racing every week for $1 million. So they're going to spend the money for the best possible equipment and for the best reliability they can have. They don't want to get in the fourth round or fifth round and have a carburetor stumble or have a fuel injection electronic problem or have an electric fuel pump that don't come on. So they're getting into those rounds. They do not want to question how good the carburetor is. Now that goes back to the cast part of it. The castings that we're getting today. And we all know that we don't cast a lot of things in America anymore. Most everything is casted overseas. Well, those castings can come in and you're dependent on how good that cast is. This isn't like starting from a big chunk of aluminum and you start whittling out holes. That cast comes in and you've got a lot of times manipulate that casting to get it to clean up to the bore, the shape, or the sizes that you want. We start with chunks of aluminum, very, very intricate chunks of aluminum, and then we start drilling holes and start whittling. With a five-axis machine, with a six-axis machine, with our CAD programs, we can get very, very detailed to dial in a thousandth of a second, to dial in 5/1000ths of a second going down the track. So our customers are willing to chase the best quality product they possibly can. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, and really, I mean, by using a block of billet, I'm assuming you can eliminate casting voids and you know different things in that type of a process that you might run into, especially after you spend some time, you know, actually milling it down and all of that. You find something a flaw in the casting that you're not going to get in the billet, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. You don't have the issues anymore. And again, the CNC machines have just changed our life. Our kids with the 3D printers, it's not anymore about going, well, I'll send it off and get it casted and it'll come back. It's not that at all. Today it's, hey, if we think about it, hey, let's make that booster. Let's put a bigger wing on that booster. Or let's chamfer that booster another way. Well, then you grab it, you go and you draw it up real quick. And I'm talking today, you can draw things in my kids started out in Tinkercad. Then they got into AutoCAD. Then they got into now the Pro-E SolidWorks. So they can draw things in minutes. And then you go, yep, put it on a 3D printer, print it out, knock it out. And then we'll put it on a dyno. We'll send it to, and I got to tell you another thing. I can't say enough about my customers. I think I work with some of the best engine builders in the country. I'll throw in Joe Jolly at Sunset Performance. I'll throw in Sandy Wilkins. I'll throw in Jason Lyon. Those guys are guys that we depend on for feedback. When we make these parts, they'll call and say, Trevor, that was horrible. It was horrible. And we'll go, okay, let's go back to the drawing board. Let's do this again. And then they'll call back going, okay, that was a great, that was a win. One guy, me and my son was dynoing in Kalamazoo, Michigan 2 weeks ago at a guy's shop by name Dave Irwin. Little shop, not a big name. And we had a 655 9 degree. And we was making a little over 1,360, 1,370, 1,390 horsepower by the time we're done. And you look at that and you go, that's not even heard of. If somebody told me that 10 years ago with a single carbureted application, I would have just told them it was impossible. That's not going to happen. But today, we CNC those motors from the carburetor, which I look at that as the jewel. I'll tell you the truth. I look at that as the jewel all the way down to the oil pan. We machine every part out of billet. The blocks are billet. The heads are billet. The crank, the rod. I mean, everything is billet. So you can get very good when you start with a chunk of billet.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mark, I want to turn it over to you for a second, and let's start talking about fuel, and especially when we're matching fuel to carburetors and all of that. Are certain fuel types better suited for specific applications? And can you give us some examples?
Yeah, absolutely, Brad. You know, Trevor touched on so many things there when you talk about twin blades and then to the Dominator and, to different cubic inch engines and cylinder head technology. As everything evolves, right, it's always been said technology waits for nobody, right? And fuel's no different, right? Fuel's had to keep up and has had to evolve as engine builders have demanded more, as racers have demanded more, and guys like Trevor have been able to supply the carburetors and the technology from that side. We've had to do the same thing. And when you think about, you know, Trevor mentioned the carburetor and the intake runner, and all we're trying to do is, like, you can't burn a liquid, right? So as the fuel vaporizes, travels down the intake runner, and you know, in a carbureted application, it's all about turning that fuel from a liquid to a vapor and then making it go bang on time, right? We want to be able to control the ignition of the fuel and then complete the burn as much as possible, right? Trying to get as much of that fuel burned on time and then out of that cylinders as efficiently as we can. So as all that stuff has changed, right, fuels had to change with it. So there's a number of different fuels based on application. We do a lot with many of the engine builders that Trevor mentioned, right? Those guys are all good friends of mine as well. And Trevor and I work closely with those guys to make sure we're staying on top of the technology for them and then helping educate them on specific applications. As engines have gotten in this high performance or this high end big dollar bracket world, these guys have started to run different cylinder head technology, we've had to certainly evolve the fuels. Methanol is not an option in some of those just because it does flow so much fuel that we've had to go to a traditional hydrocarbon gasoline. Yeah, we've got a number of different fuels, again, depending on the application. That's why, you know, we build 20 plus, unique fuels. And again, these guys are playing for thousands of a second in the drag race world. And we want to make sure that we're holding up our end of the bargain.
You know, Trevor, one thing Mark said right there, you know, they make 20 plus products of fuels out there. And obviously, when you're tuning, when you're looking for those thousands of a second. So give us your take on that as far as fuel types and how they're suited for specific applications.
Oh, you bet. I mean, we've got, you get into like the oxygenated fuels, they make great horsepower. Usually if you go from a typical race gas, like a 12 or 14 or 16, then you get into like a F series, you get into where they're making a lot of power. Now, slow burn versus fast burn versus atomized, if alcohol. Right now with the cost of fuels, everybody calls me about, hey, let's go to alcohol. Man, I really want to try alcohol because I can buy it for $200, $300 a drum. And then you go, okay, you look at a drum of F-16, that gets into around $1,200 a drum, $1,300 a drum. Well, there is a big price difference, and there also is some advantages and disadvantages. So when you start looking at a fuel burn, or you, and I'll give a good example. When I sell an alcohol carburetor, I can only put in stainless shafts. I cannot use a basic shaft. And that goes into another reason of alcohol. A lot of people will sell a cast bowl in alcohol and have it ceramic coated, which is as soon as you break a thread, say, as soon as you tighten that bowl up for the first time, it'll break the thread and that alcohol will go underneath that coating and start eroding. Well, we don't even allow it. We only do a billet bowl. We don't even allow that to happen, that conversation to come in. Now, the gases, they won't do that side of it. So if it's a petroleum-based, we know that, okay, we don't have to do that type, which we go ahead and do it, but we don't have to look those details of titanium needle and seats. We don't have to do the stainless shafts. But when I get to making horsepower, I need either a slow burn or a fast burn. The more compression that motor starts to take in, that means I don't need that certain burn rate. So with the way those fuels have existed now, it's unbelievable what Mark does. It's unbelievable what they do, because all the way up to nitro, going, hey, let's add a little bit of nitro in there. Let's see what it does. Let's try it out and see what we can burn up. And that's not, and talking about tractor pulling, that's not unusual, by the way, to burn a few things up.
So, Trevor, you mentioned one thing there about burn speed on fuels. And Brad, just to go back to your previous point, like when you're trying to pick a fuel, there's a number of things that all fall under, you know, that equation, right? The easiest way, for the most common way in which people pick a fuel, is simply based on octane, right? And octane's the ability or a measurement that is put on fuels to resist detonation and or pre-ignition. Again, it's all about lighting the fuel when we want to light it and then controlling that burn. But that's not the only way to pick a fuel. And one of the things that Trevor brought up was the burn speed. We would also, you know, that measurement's called the reed vapor pressure. And the higher the reed vapor pressure, the easier that fuel goes to a vapor from a liquid. The lower that number, the more difficult it is to, or what we would say, the slower the burn speed on that fuel, right? So, and again, those aren't the only two things to look at, but again, those are two common things that people look at is octane, reed vapor pressure, cylinder head design plays a big role in that. Certainly the compression ratio is important, camshaft technology, like a lot of things go into picking the right fuel. But again, that's why we have so many, that's why we try to be so versatile. That's why we try to make sure that we're all encompassing and giving the customer what it is they're looking for.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, one thing we talk a lot about in performance and racing is the give and take. You know, you take something over here and you get it, but you might give up something over here. Sure. So let's talk about choices. And is there a choice between consistency versus horsepower? And does fuel really impact performance?
You know, for years, we would have said that there was certainly, you know, the quicker you go, the more power you make, the more you're going to give up on consistency and reliability. You know, Trevor might have a little bit more insight on this from his top dragster days or some of the things he's done in land speed, but, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon to go to some of these races, and guys are going to be dialed in the eighth mile in that low 420 range, you know, consistent 430s, and they're going to put a lot of laps on that stuff. And again, we just have to give them the tools that they need to go to work. Trevor, I don't know if you have any additional thoughts on that, but guys are going quicker and faster than they've ever been, and stuff continues to seems to continue to live, and it's as consistent as it's ever been.
Yeah, I'd love to add to that. Now, this is going back to the evolution of machining and engine building. You know, 5-7 years ago, and I'm talking about just basic bracket racing, again, local bracket racing or million-dollar bracket racing. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, let's go. A 470 car, that's a pretty tough car. That's awesome. You know, a few years go by, 450 car, man, you're a tough cookie. You got it going on. You really do have it going on. Now I've got guys that are running 418s, 417s with a single carbureted application with no nitrous, no boost, none of that. It's just pure fuel, pure single carbureted, not even dual carbureted. You start talking those kind of numbers, it gets, they're fast. They're awesome.
Yeah, I would say so. We have a couple of questions from the chat. I want to start with this one because I think it's sort of a good launching point from some of the things that we've talked about. It says, have carburetors really changed that much in the last 50 years? Is it the carburetor technology or the advanced machining that makes today's carburetor so precise?
Yes, 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 and yes. You know, the Bernoulli equation, 1738, I mean, that hasn't changed. What has changed? Fuels, CNC machining of heads, of intakes, of just basic porting knowledge, turning a valve from a typical big block Chevrolet of 23 degrees, turning that thing to 18 degrees, turn it to 16, turn it to 15, turn it to 9 degrees. So has the carburetors changed? Yes. Has the engines changed? Yes. Has the machining changed? Yes. When you turn that valve angle up to where 9 degree, 655s, that'll make 1400 horse. So the largest carburetor that I know that Holly has ever built is around a 1475. That has changed because that's usually kind of where we start a lot of time on some of those engines. So when we get up to around 2500 CFM, that carburetor's changed. And another part that's changed is vacuum. We run wet sumps, we run dry sumps, we do vacuum pumps, we do all these different things to make a motor. And I go back to Lake Speed and the stuff that he's doing with some of the total seal and some of the oils and some of the rings. Talking about the Dave Irwin a few minutes ago. Dave Irwin, okay, we're high-fiving in a dyno room going, man, that's awesome, that's killer. Well, then he takes me outside into his shop and he shows me a profilometer. And of course, a lot of guys and all the NASCAR guys know, all the IndyCar guys know, a lot of the drag race cars don't know that profilometer world. Now you get into Pro Stock, you get into Jason Lyon, Joe Jolly, Sunset, you get into those guys know. But he's showing to me this profilometer and he's talking about ring seal. That pulls harder on that carburetor. If you talk about valves, it pulls harder. If you talk about fuel, it pulls harder on that carburetor. So we used to take a carburetor and dial it in with 5 inches of vacuum. Now we can get a carburetor to pull in around 1 inch of vacuum. So that means we can make the carburetor bigger and not need as much vacuum to pull that amount, the lighter amount of fuel in through that engine. So it does. So yes, all of that is the right answer in my opinion.
I like that. And I love it when Lake Speed comes on here and starts talking about RVK and all of the other things. And I think the first time he pulled out a profilometer, we had just a rush of questions. Where do we get one of those? Watching him on YouTube last night. Another question. This one came in a little bit before we started, but I'm installing a 383 Chevy engine in a 1992 G30 van, removing the throttle body. What is the best way to supply fuel to the carburetor? Leave the throttle body pump in the fuel tank, or remove it and go back to the old style pickup and use an electric pump or a mechanical pump off of the engine?
Brad, what are you doing to me? No, I'm joking.
that was
well, there's a lot in that conversation right there. I love a in-tank fuel pump. It keeps it cool. If I can get the pressure down, a lot of times an in-tank fuel pump was made for a fuel injection. So it's going to have pressure usually around 28 to around 50 pounds of PSI or fuel pressure. Well, a carburetor, I really only need a typical natural naturally aspirated situation. I will get into, I only need around 5.5, 6.5 PSI. So I need to reduce that down dramatically. So then I go into, okay, is it going to be in a street? Is it going to be into a race application? What type of application is that going to next? If it's street application, I would probably just put a basic little fuel pump on that'll pump 10 pounds of PSI, and I'll put a regulator on it to knock it down to 4.5, 5 PSI, and you'll be fine.
Okay. Another question. This one's interesting. Is there a limit to the amount of power that you can make with a carb?
I think the answer is going to be no. Here's why. I think there's going to be other limiting factors that get in. I mean, I get a motor here about a year and a half ago that we put 3 carburetors on it. Now, Shane Molinari was a great racer out West Coast. We're having this conversation, and Justin Melton at M&M Race Cars, we're going, well, 2 carburetors, we just can't get enough CFM at it. And that's there. We're making around 2,500 CFM, 5,000 CFM. And the first thing Shane goes, can we put 3 on it? I'm like, heck yeah, I would rather sell 3 than 1 all day long. So I put 3 carburetors on that motor, and it's a rock star. They're going to run it in Vegas here in a few weeks out at the,
or what?
Spring Fling for $1 million.
Wow. That's really cool. It's interesting. And I always like, especially when we're talking to, folks like you, Mark and Trevor. So let's say I'm working on something, and Edward's question was sort of a great jumping point for this. Here's what I'm doing. This is my application, all of that. So I'm looking at doing something. Trevor, can I call you and say, okay, here's what I'm doing, and you can get me build the right thing for me. And then, let's get together with Mark also and say, hey, among the 20 different fuels, 20 plus fuels that Fuel Factory has to offer, how can I put together a system, on the top of my engine with the intake and the fuel delivery and all of that stuff to get the most out of it? How does that work?
Oh yeah. And more information before we start is always better. So a lot of times what we do is, and not necessarily qualifying customer, but we'll have a spec sheet. We want to know your engine size. We want to know your engine make. We want to know if it's a professional builder, not a professional builder. We want to know what your constraints are, what type of racing you're doing, what venue you're. I mean, we do carburetors for monster truck stuff. We do carburetors for some NASCAR stuff, some lower level NASCAR stuff. We do some carburetors for all level of venues. So basically what they'll do is they'll either go on my website and they'll fill out, or they'll call our direct number, or they'll call my cell phone, because I give my cell phone number out like it's candy. It don't hurt my feelings at all. So a lot of times they'll get that process started as saying they're going to build a 454 or a 383, and they'll start that process, and then we start down what fuel are you going to run. And that's when we get Mark involved. Then they'll go, okay, well, what's that car weigh? Or how much are you going to street drive that car versus are you going to race that car? So a lot of times we'll go down each individual step, and that's in our spec sheet. The more they fill out, they don't have to fill it all out, but if they fill out a spec sheet, a basic, I'm going to be pretty close in the ball game of, okay, we're going to be able to move up a jet size or down a jet size, or we might have to move up a couple of jet sizes, but I'm going to be pretty good out of the box, to be honest with you.
I like that. Mark, this one's probably for you. The difference in power using Q16 versus methanol.
Yeah, Brad, that'll certainly be application specific, right? It's not a one size fits all. It'll depend on the cubic inch, what cylinder head we've got on it. It's going to also depend on exactly what we're doing with it. But sure, certainly very familiar with the Q16, right? It's an oxygenated fuel. A lot of the times where you find big increases in power with an oxygenated fuel is going to be on a combination that's more inefficient, right? The more efficient the application is, the less performance gain we see with an oxygenated product. But certainly an oxygenated 116 like Q16 or RF16O will certainly knock on the door of methanol all day long. And typically where you see the big gain on methanol is actually on the torque number and not always on the horsepower number, right? But again, a lot of that will depend on the application.
Mm-hmm. I got you. Trevor, I'm a little more curious too to talk about Gittem. And obviously you build wonderful carburetors and all of that, but even just perusing through all the other products on your website, from piston cooling kits to parts and all of the different things, just tell us a little bit more about what you have to offer, if you would.
Yeah, piston cooling kit. The whole reason for that is burning pistons. This is going to go back to truck and tractor pulling again. I know if people appreciate truck and tractor pulling, it kind of goes back to my Kentucky time. We could take a farm tractor, Caterpillar, we could take anything, and we could put a piston oil in that, and we could run out in the field all day long at 50 pounds of boost and never burn a piston. We could put and that's because of piston. We could run 300 feet in our blown alcohol Hemis, and we'd burn a piston right up. You're thinking, well, how can that burn up in 300 feet and that won't burn up for a day? So piston oils, we do install piston oils in LS. We install piston oils in big block Chevrolet, small block Chevrolet, big block Ford, small block Ford. So we do a lot of different piston oils also that help increase the power, which also allows us to put in a bigger charge, basically a hotter charge for that piston. We do fuel filters. We've just gotten into some mechanical pumps. So we're starting to do some mechanical pumps because they're more consistent on our side for some of our racers. We've gotten into doing some blower tops, supercharger. A big thing that's happened the past few years, of course, if you don't want to build that 700 cubic inch motor, we're going to put a blower on it. So I work a lot with BDS. I work a lot with those guys we put a single carburetor, and it's going back to larger carburetors. We'll put a single carbureted blower top on it to adjust the blower because we can get up to 2,500 CFM and we don't need those two carburetors anymore. So we make blower tops. We make all kinds of different blower adapters. We make straps and everything for those blower straps, for the blower tops. So we do a lot of different things that way just to get more consistency and more horsepower out of our motors.
I like that. That's pretty cool. And again, the tractor pulling. I think you might be one of the first ones I've done one of these with that has talked about that, which is awesome. Mark, on the Fuel Factory, very comprehensive website too. I love that, from descriptions to fuel values to specs and SDS sheets and all of that. It's really easy to navigate, really easy to get through. Just tell us a little bit more about Fuel Factory and what I might need to know as I'm talking to Trevor looking for a carburetor. Next step is I'm going to you. Just give us a little more of an overview, if you would.
Sure. And first of all, Brad, it's been great being here talking. Anytime we can sit around and talk shop, it's always a good time. But yeah, Fuel Factory is a company founded on morals and ethics, right? It's founded by industry professionals who have an unbelievable passion for the industry, right? Created by racers, for racers, blend over, I think we're at just over 25 blends of fuel. Manufactured, warehoused, and shipped out of our manufacturing facility in Kentucky. And we're growing nationwide distribution every day. We get those questions every day is, where can I get it and how much is it? And we're certainly thankful for the opportunity and the growth that we've had. And looking to keep grinding and keep growing.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. And gosh, wish both of you guys the best of luck. And I shouldn't even say that because obviously what you're doing is just amazing work and that's going to pay off for sure. It is just fantastic. All right, Trevor, I'm going to try and ask this one the right way. It's another question that came in from the chat. Would a custom inline, is it four BBL? Is that just four barrel?
Four barrel. Yep, you bet. Okay.
On a tunnel ram, be viable, single four barrel rules permitting, for better distribution, max effort, and a motor?
I love it all. I love every piece. Heck yeah. The viability, you bet. If we can machine it, if we can think about it, if I can put that carburetor right over that runner, that intake runner, you bet it's going to make power. If I can put a booster right over that runner and it will pull fuel out of a banjo, out of a booster, it's going to make power. So you bet it Let's try it all. I like it all. Again, I'm not shy about mechanical fuel injection, EFI, carbureted. If it'll pull fuel, I'm trying to pour it in it. If I've got to pour it in a bucket, we'll try to pour it in a bucket over the motor. I'm into it.
That's awesome. And one final one here. Do you, and you've sort of answered this, do you build carbs for circle or dirt track? And let me expand on that. Is there anything you're not going to build a carburetor for when it comes to automotive racing?
No, we want them all. I love circle track racing. I enjoy it. The drag racing market, I jumped in the drag racing market just because of that customer base. If you ever go to a large money bracket race, and I don't know where you live, but you got to come out sometime and go to a big money bracket race. It's high stakes gambling. The entry fees are $5,000-$10,000 a pop, and they'll have 700 people there for to enter that race. So they're chasing $1 million. So I did go down that road. Now I do carburetors for some circle track. I do some carburetors for dirt track. I do carburetors for all kinds of different pieces. And I do some offshore boating. The biggest thing though is time. You know, we start machining and we only have a few machines. So it's like, okay. And I'll tell you this, we back up. The first year, basically, we build 100 carburetors. The second year, you build a couple of hundred carburetors. Before long, you're building 600, 700, 800 carburetors. You're thinking, holy moly, what have I done? I made this comment this morning going, I don't usually get to sit on that beach with my pinky up holding a drink a lot of times. Usually I'm sitting in front of a machine or I'm sitting in front of a computer. Or I'm sitting in front of something trying to build it. And a lot of times I think maybe I should have went back and stayed in a job because this is a lot of work right now.
Yeah. Well, look, I think instead of a beach with a martini in a shop with a jug of Mark's fuel and one of your carburetors, then everything is just perfect. So I think we can get that.
I will add to that. You heard him say Kentucky also. Now, we make the best whiskey and we make the best bourbon. And the reason he come to Kentucky is we have those steels around.
I like that. I'll agree with that. Trevor, Mark, this has been awesome. What a great education as well. We can't thank you enough for joining us here.
No, thank you, Brad. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us. What a great session. So this webinar has been recorded. It will be posted later on the ePortrait platform, distributed through our newsletter, our social media channels. We will be back next week. We'll be talking coatings. In the meantime, we pushed Get Them Performance products back on the homepage of the ePortrait platform. So please, for more information, visit www.eportrait.com. And thanks again. See you next week. Bye-bye.
ePortrait is a digital platform that we've created basically to make life easier in the business community of auto racing.
ePortrait, there is no e-commerce. It's literally a connection just like at a trade show. So now, any time of the year, a buyer could reach out to a supplier.
When you see a product that you're interested in, all you need to do is click on the request more information, and then from there, it is forwarded directly to the buyer or to the supplier.
ePortrait really eliminates having to travel, closing down your shop. Now you have a place to showcase globally your racing product and technology.
Land speed record holder George Poteet's Speed Demon rocketed 481 miles per hour at the Bonneville Salt Flats. You don't go that fast without ARP fasteners.
There is no way that we could go the speed that we've gone, the number of times we've gone, with a lesser quality bolt than ARP supplies to us. And we absolutely wouldn't be where we were today if it weren't for ARP.
When failure is not an option, it's ARP-bolts.com.
We're Performance Plus Global Logistics. Our team of dedicated performance industry and logistics experts get valuable cars and components to the track on time in top condition. We provide expedited logistics solutions for the performance industry using direct routes instead of deferred options and communicate all necessary information to the appropriate resources to meet regulations and ensure a smooth transit and secure delivery, both domestically and internationally. And we exceed customer expectations by providing best-in-class service with an efficient and cost-effective system in place. Contact us today to book your next shipment.
You work as hard as your truck, and you have no time for downtime. That's why more truck owners trust Blue Def, America's America's number one diesel exhaust fluid brand. Each batch is guaranteed pure, so you can avoid costly repairs caused by inferior DEF. Demand America's best for your truck. Blue DEF and Blue DEF Platinum. Put trust in your truck.
With roots in the Midwest that date back well before the Model T, Fifth Third Bank has a long history of serving the needs of automotive companies. While much has changed over the years, our passion for helping businesses put cars on the road and on the track has not. Today, we are more committed than ever as a member of SEMA, a founding member of PRI, and a sponsor of multiple race teams across several racing series.
For over a decade, Fifth Third Bank has been a staunch supporter of our industry and a great partner for many companies in the motorsports field.
Our business has been growing extremely fast, and really we could not be where we are today without Fifth Third. They provided amazing strategic advice, the capital we need to support our phases of growth.
They are true partners for me now, and what they do with their involvement in motorsports is untouched in this community.
Where can we take your business? Fifth Third Bank.
Where will you find Faurecia Racing components? Circle track, drag racing, and any top race shop. In every form of motorsports competition, our valves and valve train components deliver race-proven design and technology. And we've brought that same performance to our street applications as well. We're backed by 5 decades of experience, an extensive range of off-the-shelf components, and our custom valve department has the fastest turnaround times in the industry. Faurecia Racing Components. Stand with us or race against us.